Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are on the planet, whatever will apply. This is Ann Garner. Welcome to the Wednesday Cosmic Citizen Broadcast, and my co-hosts are here, Chris Halverson and James Woodward. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Ann.
Good morning, Ann, from Chicago.
From Chicago and from Boulder, Chris. So this is just, we're in all these different time zones. I love it. And we have some folks already in the chat room. I see our good friend Surinder Singh, Brother Dave, hello. Lou Bart, Lou, hello, Lou. Boom, hey, Boom. Okay, while we're waiting, we always play a song from, and we'll do one with Pato, to give people an opportunity to refresh. Be sure, folks, if you don't hear us when we're going live, to hit F5 if you don't see the refresh button. So take it away, Pato, loving service, and see you guys in a few minutes, about 5 minutes, okay, guys? They'll give us time to set up.
I wanna learn to love, and I wanna
giving a helping hand. You see, the harvest is plenty, but the laborers are few. So let your light so shine that men may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven.
Welcome back again to the Wednesday Cosmic Citizen Show, and my co-hosts are here, Chris Halverson and James Woodward. And gentlemen, we're up and running here, and I don't know if y'all heard it. We may have some special effects here with Rocky, the dog I'm taking care of. Did y'all hear him while the song was playing?
Yeah, I was wondering what that was.
Yeah. Well, he's not a dog. He's a small horse, so, and nobody's going to mess with me. And also, I'm hearing an interesting sound. Sounds like a smoke alarm has run down on batteries, so sounds like a truck backing up. But that's part of live broadcasting. And, James, you came up with a great idea, and we do sincerely apologize to our listening audience, Mr. Venosa. Was called out to another country. That's what I was told by his wife. So we all understand that when we have emergencies, and he's a very busy gentleman, famous artist. But that's okay. We're famous too in our own, at least in our own minds, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, James, you came up with a great idea, and we do encourage folks to please call in. And we have some already have a live chat room that's very, very lively. And so, James, would you tell us your idea? And we do already have a caller, but we'll take them. Tell your concept here, and then we'll take this caller.
Sure.
But caller, let me say something. Caller, if you want to talk, press 1 on your phone so your little hand will be raised up. If I don't see the hand raised up, I will not bring someone in. So, okay, go ahead, James.
Great. Well, I know that so many of us had a wonderful opportunity this last weekend to celebrate commemorate the birth of Jesus here on the planet. So, I was at one of those wonderful celebrations, and we were trying to get people to call in. That's the idea, to share what their experiences were and a little bit about what they did around the country, even around the world. We don't know who exactly is listening in, and they may have had some sort of a Jesus Day birthday celebration too. And
absolutely. Go ahead. I'm paused. Uh-huh.
Well, to start it off, I was just going to read a short little quote here from the Urantia book.
And what page section? And I like the. Of course, I still use the original book, but we're all
coming
moving
to that.
In different directions.
It's from paper 103.
103.
Paper 103, The Reality of Religious Experience, page 1133. And it is section 4. Spiritual communion. The characteristic difference between a social occasion and a religious gathering is that in contrast with the secular, the religious is pervaded by the atmosphere of communion. In this way, human association generates a feeling of fellowship with the divine, and this is the beginning of group worship. Partaking of a common meal was the earliest type of social communion. And so did early religions provide that some portion of the ceremonial sacrifice should be eaten by the worshipers. Even in Christianity, the Lord's Supper retains this mode of communion. The atmosphere of the communion provides a refreshing and comforting period of truce in the conflict of the self-seeking ego with the altruistic urge of the indwelling spirit monitor. And this is the prelude to true worship. The practice of the presence of God, which eventuates in the emergence of the brotherhood of man. I love that that quote, and I'll say just a couple of words about the occasion that I attended was at Camp Brotherhood up near Seattle, a retreat center that was founded by a rabbi and a priest many decades ago, who came together in a spirit of interfaith harmony and created this retreat center, and it's still going strong. And the folks up there in the Northwest titled their conference and their gathering "The Fatherhood of God and the Brotherhood of Man." And we had a great time. We had speakers. It was more like a conference or a mini conference than just a picnic or a little gathering. So we had wonderful presentations and workshops, and we had music and campfire, and we had Sunday service was led by Tom Choquette and Thomas Peary. That was wonderful. We also had the Father Tracy, who founded this retreat center, gave us a wonderful little speaking.
Wow.
Well, not quite a sermon. And he's 91 years old.
Are you serious? Wow.
Those of you out there who are interested, probably if you Google Camp Brotherhood, you'll find out more about this this amazing Irish priest who came over to this country after the First World War, Second World War, I'm sorry, and then started this this wonderful outreach center.
Wow, and you know, that goes to show, I was with the gentleman yesterday here who's been behind the scenes in Hollywood for many years. He is 78 and one of the most brilliant financial minds I've ever known. I mean, it's just amazing. He has steadied the ship for many people here, and didn't get caught up in the Madoff thing. He did know Madoff, but none of his clients, some of his clients did, but they didn't tell him that they were going to do some things. But anyway, his mind at 78, almost 79, I sat there and was charmed by his astute ability to just, he was dealing with people in all realms and in the financial realm, very spiritual. So I said, okay, what is the key? Here we are celebrating the birth of Jesus. And what is the key? And we do have a caller. Well, they keep hanging up, folks. I think people, I don't know what's happening. People will call and then it drops off. I hope everything's okay in web land. That was a Skype number. What is the key, since we're celebrating a birthday here, of staying youthful, vibrant, and as we get older? Chris, scientifically, what would you say? Because I see a lot of people in this movement who are extremely vibrant and carrying that torch for the next generation.
Well, I'd say there's no substitute for the spiritual gravity within your mind, lifting that mind up so that the material gravity doesn't drag it down quite so fast.
You know, that's an interesting statement. I remember the first time I read that about being less responsive to material gravity. And that's, when I first read that in the early 80s, I went, excuse me? What does that mean, Chris?
Well, I mean, obviously the actual molecular matter of your body is inexorably bound to material gravity. But the mind energy system, where your consciousness resides, serves two masters. It serves a material master and a spirit master. A material master on the lower end and a spirit master on the upper end. And the spiritual gravity, end of your mind, I mean the material gravity end of your mind, is just there. You can't do much about it. It's always there, and tending to settle your consciousness down towards the material, lower material end of your mental energy system. But the spirit end, you have personality. You have the power of choice as to what the nature of that hand that grasps that upper end of your mind, how that behaves. Once you begin to really awaken the powers of choice post 20 years of age, we all need to be actively fostering an awareness that we have this choice and seeking to consecrate that choice to lifting that consciousness in that mental energy system up away from the lower domains where the material gravity would tend to draw it down. What you're doing is by choosing to identify your mental energy system with spirit, that brings in spirit gravity. You don't draw it up. You just allow yourself to be connected to spirit substance, and spirit substance is subject to spirit gravity, and it will draw your consciousness up.
Wow. James, what do you think about this?
Well, that was amazing. I enjoyed that. And as you were talking about the different realms and domains, I was drawn to the quote from paper 111 on page 1216. And it's talking about the mortal mind and the spirit. And this is the part that I like here. It says, mortal mind is a temporary intellect system loaned to human beings for use during a material lifetime. And as they use this mind, they are either accepting or rejecting the potential of eternal existence. Mind is about all you have of universe reality that is subject to your will, and the soul, the Morantia self, will faithfully portray the harvest of the temporal decisions which the mortal self is making. Human consciousness rests gently upon the electrochemical mechanism below and delicately touches the spirit Morantia energy system above. Of neither of these two systems is the human being ever completely conscious in his mortal life. Therefore must he work in mind of which he is conscious. It goes on to talk some more about it. That's a great section there. There's more in there. But I thought about how if we can reach up to that gently touching part, that connection to our superconscious, what that does, in my experience, it leads me into joy, the joy of living, in the consciousness that we are indwelt and that we are living in this friendly universe. And that that keeps me lively and young, I guess.
I like that. Joy. Did you say the joy of consciousness?
The joy of knowing that we are consciously indwelt by
yes.
a fragment of God. And
well, you know, I hear frequently when people meet us, they're even though yes, it's obvious that some of us are old hippies. I actually did not step into the hippie realm as far as some of the things, but I guess you would say I'm a hippie because that's my era, that they see, that they notice that we don't age like a lot of people. And I hear this over and over again, and especially from people who are in their 20s. They're just stunned. And I said, well, you know, we really do have an eternal outlook. Therein lies the difference. When you wake up in the morning, because whatever your you're reading and studying, and whoever you're engaged with, whatever your consciousness is, you'll take that on. So if you've been, like last night, I enjoyed your study group in Chicago. Well, when I didn't watch any TV. I haven't watched any TV in a week. This house has been totally silent because it's been very intense, all the meetings I have. So the last thing I need is come home in this beautiful home and create a disturbance in the force. Of course, Rocky here, you know, is always begging me to go for a walk, and that's relaxing, and I shoot my basketball. But what I'm going to say is this. When you wake up in the morning, what do you first think of? What is first in your mind? Is it your ailments, your worrying about who, what, when, where, how? You're picking up the phone to call somebody to engage yourself in mindless gossip. You're worried about your body. You turn on the news. That amazes me. Honestly, gentlemen, I just refuse to turn on the news to put that in my mind the first thing in the morning, because what will that do to you? If you turn on the television and watch the images of any network, what's that going to do to your mind consciousness? Chris?
Well, and of course, you know, one of the, that, you know, what you're suggesting is, of course, true. Because it's sad to record that so few persons on your rancha take delight in cultivating their objective consciousness, when they turn the TV on, they become subject to it. TV shapes their mindful energy system, perhaps for the whole day. Now, the very fact that that's the case, recognizing our susceptibility to that, because we all begin our journey in the domain of subjective mind with the agitant mind, we should all be challenging ourselves to be, in the world but not of the world, to be more objective in our consciousness. Can we get to the point where we can receive information about the state of the world, but not immediately morph, benighted form? Can we stand integrous in the face of the limitations of the world around us? And the same is true, back to the original point about our health. To what degree can you stand objectively within, in your inner domain, or does, material gravity and the vicissitudes of the material life just dictate, the nature of your body and your consciousness? Are you a victim of antecedent causation?
Are you a victim of antecedent causation? A major question. I met with a holistic medical doctor yesterday who, seeking to get him to become a guest. We've known each other since about 90. And that shifting that he made, he was over a hospital here in the 80s. And I watched him make this shift. He said, "Ann, I'm killing people." He said, "I'm literally killing people." So he started shifting, put himself back, he went back to school. And I watched him over the years. And he became very disillusioned in the mid-90s because he was being rejected by mainline medicine. And in 94, I went up to Santa Barbara with him and two other friends. He was speaking to a very large medical group. And he said, "Ann, you said this was going to happen 3 years ago." I said, "Yes, I felt it." "And you'll end up in teaching in medical schools. And there's going to have to be a shift, because this is not the way medicine started out. And he's very successful. He only takes limited patients. Very famous people. I never know who I'm going to see, of all orders, you know, of business, Hollywood, politics, because he speaks lies. He doesn't get them on drugs. Cancers are leaving their bodies because of that. Number one, that this cancer thing. I have one blood sister who just, I can't really talk to her much anymore. 5 years ago, I called her. I said, I love you so much, but I cannot continue with this constant barrage of all the medicines, all your illness. You're caught up in the medical thing because you're head of all the hospital things, and you're always there. And then the gossip. I said, I don't want to hear it. If you want to call me and chat about the beauty of the farm life and the beauty of the sun rising like you used to, guess what? She cannot do it. She started weeping. She said, I am so caught up in this lifestyle of bad eating habits, bad health habits, the talking about all. I said, well, at least you're honest. At least you're honest about it, that you cannot let go of the antecedent
causation.
Say it again, please.
Antecedent causation.
Antecedent causation. I said, well, that's one thing about a whitehead. We're very direct, you know, with try to be, you know, direct while being caring, you know. And I said, well, that you just took on the whitehead mantle there when you said that.
Finish your thought there. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say that you know when I hear from her, gentlemen? You know when if the phone rings and I see it's her number, I know that somebody is near death's door or somebody in the community has gotten in trouble with whatever, you know, relationships or the law. I mean, and I just have a brief conversation, and I say, thank you, thank you, thank you. I appreciate you keeping me up to date on who is ill, who's in trouble, and who's dying. I never hear about births and weddings. But let me say this. I don't know if y'all know this, but Mississippi has one of the highest rates of cancer in the nation. Did y'all know that?
No, I didn't.
And the particular county that I was reared in is the second highest rate of cancer. I don't know what happened to that community. I think it's because they came off the farm life, you know, because in the 50s the government began to take over farms and pay us not to have crops. So they lost that sense of being with the land. Now, it is coming back. That's the only thing I can figure out. And I can't stay there very long at one time because I begin to take it on. And I hope my little sister will call in, my little sister cousin. She's the only one there that reads the book and has to probably hide it in the barn. In fact, y'all keep talking. I'm actually going to get in touch with her on the cell phone and remind her. She's going to call in sometime and actually sing a cappella for us.
I just wanted to, you know, touch
and
on
I
that.
And I
want
to remind folks, if you want to talk, push number one. There are people coming in, but they're not pushing one to let me know they want to talk. So go ahead.
Yeah, just, you know, that comment you made, Ann, about, you know, how your sister, you know, said that she just can't help herself. It's a very unfortunate state of consciousness that mankind has kind of collectively gotten themselves into, where they've been so overwhelmed by the preaching that we're just material energy systems. There is no such thing as free will and choice, And all of these messages, you know, that sort of cater to this victim mentality, even about yourself, you know, that you're a victim of your own self. And this is, it's just so unfortunate. Of course you can do something about it. You can choose otherwise. Yourself is a child. Yourself needs a parent. And, you know, if we aren't personalities that can choose to parent that self, you know, what are we? Animals or selves, if all we are is a self that has no choice but to follow its initial programming, then we're not really persons. We're not real. And it's a message that is so desperately needed in the you know, both the psychiatric and the direct physical medical domains, that you are the captain, and you can choose to guide your body into calmer waters. If you're if you find yourself in a never-ending series of life circumstances that are, or you're being buffeted about by everything that comes around the corner, it's time to start choosing to change course. What thoughts do you have, James?
I agree with that, and I tend to think that, from a psychological standpoint, a lot of this is due to the fact that we don't have visible spiritual leadership, or we don't have enough of it, I should say. I'm reminded of when the Master was walking around, that sometimes people became healed of their mental and physical ailments just by being in his presence. And sometimes it was all he had to do was say something, be well, your faith has healed you. To a possible even the demonic thing where he said, spirits, leave this soul. And I think that's what, when you're talking about that, where people settle into the material mind, and they just give themselves over to the fact, and also of the despair of knowing that they, or believing that they don't have a choice, that free will that you talked about isn't true. And it really is. And sometimes it takes somebody else that really has so much faith and conviction that they can just speak the words or just live the words, and people see it and believe it and realize that they do have an option, that they can step up to higher levels of spiritual living, which is the joy of existence.
Yeah, it's a message that is just not very common anymore. Like Anne was pointing out, especially in the psychological domains, the answer is always pharmaceutical these days. And when those individuals were standing in the presence of Jesus, they weren't made whole because he popped some fancy pharmaceutical in their mouth. Most of these problems are not a direct material issue. It's simply that the individual has failed to choose to exist in a domain of mind that lies above all of the imperfections that are just inherent in our material bodies. We don't have perfect material bodies. And so if you dwell down in those lower domains of imperfect molecular structure, then your mind conforms to those imperfections. Choose to rise up above it. Flatten out those divots in your consciousness. And put yourself in a right mind. And if you, sustain that state of a more smoothly flowing mind, a more stable consciousness, over time, because mind energy dominates the molecular energy, you actually can begin to right some of the inadequacies of that material system. There are limits to that, but if you can establish a long-standing pattern of right mind, that will improve the limitations of your material body.
So true, and also the fact of interassociation with our fellows can mm-hmm. help so much in that area. And this the topic we're talking about here, the communion of worship and fellowship. I'm going back over to paper 160 here, Rodin on page 1776, point number 3, the enthusiasm for living. Isolation tends to exhaust the energy charge of the soul. Association with one's fellows is essential to the renewal of the zest for life and is indispensable to the maintenance of the courage to fight those battles consequent upon the ascent to the higher levels of human living. Friendship enhances the joys and glorifies the triumphs of life. Loving and intimate human associations tend to rob suffering of its sorrow and hardship of much of its bitterness. The presence of a friend enhances all beauty and exalts every goodness. And it goes on there. And right across the page there, more directly, Rodin says, the secret of all this problem is wrapped up in spiritual communion, in worship. From the human standpoint, it is a question of combined meditation and relaxation. Meditation makes the contact of mind with spirit. Relaxation determines the capacity for spiritual receptivity. And this interchange of strength for weakness, courage for fear, the will of God for the mind of self constitutes worship. At least that is the way the philosopher views it. And I like to view it with that philosopher, the communion aspect of getting together, and especially when our community, we don't have church per se, but we do have these spiritual occasions like Jesus' birthday, and they really are mm-hmm. solemn affairs and joyful. So I sure hope that some of the listeners out there were engaging in that, and if they weren't, make an effort to find other readers in your area at least every August 21st, and spend a little time, have a communion. We actually did a little communion with some wine and bread, and it was really nice.
Yeah, that spiritual communion, is so important. I mean, thinking about like the reasons you went to those quotes and how it ties to this issue of a healthful state of mind. It's impossible to engage another in spiritual communion if you are down in the depressed recesses of yourself. You must lift yourself up out of those deep holes within yourself to some degree in order to be able to engage another. It's an automatic, help to this problem that so many people have of sinking into depression of self.
Oh, I like that's an interesting term, depression of self. And gentlemen, we have several callers. Let's start taking some callers. And I do want to remind folks to press number 1 if you want to say something. 817 you're on the air. I think I know who it is.
Yes, man cannot live by bread alone.
It's Suzanne Kelly.
Yes, hey. I always love that. Hey, how are y'all doing?
And I'll go ahead and bring in another. I like it when several people are here. It's a true study group. And in saying that, I participate in three study groups right now every week. James, I'm in yours in Chicago, yours in Boulder, one in down in Robert Burns. I forget the name of the – they're in Orange County. And what I've noticed that really each study group – I've been attending study groups since the early 80s, and I'm traveling around the country, in fact, around North America and sometimes out of the country. James, you've been in a lot of study groups. And I see a lot more spiritual, the essence of meditation, worship, and communion, and food. More and more people, study groups, have formed. And this, James, y'all have food every week, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, that's part of our... Part of a meeting is we either have a meal out in a neighborhood restaurant, or we actually prefer to cook in and enjoy the communion, the fellowship of cooking up stuff together and washing some dishes together. It really adds to the whole flavor of the meeting.
And that's,
yeah,
that
the
is
family.
That is communion. Well, let me take another caller here and a couple of more. 613, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Ann.
Oh, Surrender Singh.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Everybody knows who Surrender. And also we have 715 on the air. You with us, 715?
Yeah, hi, Ann. This is Vicki Arkins.
Oh, hi, Vicki. Well, we have a real virtual study group. I love it. So, first of all, Suzanne, did you do anything? I know... there was an event held in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Were you able to go?
Oh, no. We had some other family things going on that we had to take care of, so I didn't get to go, but I did have my own private little celebration. So.
Oh, that's special. James, would you take the and Chris, would y'all take the rudder? I'm going to have to go find another phone. These phones only last about 40 minutes. That's why I like those old hardwired. And yes, and Vicki is with us also.
No problem. Hey, Vicki, how are you? Why don't you tell us about your experiences on August 21st?
Well, actually, I went to a 65th wedding anniversary, and there was a mass. And this was not a Urantia function, but it was an anniversary that I went to, and it was a really nice experience, though, because the mass that we went to was just there was some gorgeous singing that was going on. There was a wonderful young man who led some liturgical singing, and the words were beautiful about Jesus, and he had just a wonderful way of engaging the congregation. He would sing a verse and then invite the rest of us to come in during the chorus, and it was a very uplifting experience for Jesus' birthday.
I was just going to say, isn't that wonderful when you can take the situation that you find yourself in and transform it internally with that recognition that it is the actual anniversary of Jesus' birth.
Yes, indeed.
Wonderful. Surrender, you're newer to the Urantia book, but did you have any sort of experience with other readers on the birthday?
Is that Chris who's asking me this?
This is James asking.
Oh, okay, James. Sorry, I was trying to figure out. I think Chris is there too, right?
Yes, I'm here also, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, James, you guys, like I've been listening, you have read the book, to the depth, and you guys know, the essence of the whole thing. No, I have very little knowledge. In fact, if you ask me into the depth of the book at all, But I can always capture, you know, what is common, in which comes through in common sense, and I find it adds up and it's good. So, yeah, I've been listening to your talk for the last half an hour or so, and it's interesting, yeah.
And surrender, I'm back. Hi, I got another phone. Surrender, number one, tell them where you're going Friday evening.
Yeah,
I love it.
Interesting. There is a group of people here in Ottawa, where I live in Canada, who listen to the talk show of Urantia book, and I participated as all of you know a few times. I came in one time. I co-hosted with Anne. So they were listening, and they found that I was a guy who lives in Ottawa. So there is a group of six, seven people, about seven or eight people probably, who listen to this show, and I think they follow Urantia book, and they sent me a personal email. They wanted to meet me and talk to me, and which I'm going to meet them day after tomorrow over a lunch. Though I'm kind of not very sure what I can talk about Urantia book, but I'm going to talk about many other things, and I know that in the ambit of spirituality, everything and anything is possible. So we will talk of whatever. I'll learn something from them, and they'll probably tell me something. So this is what's going to happen on Friday.
Well, you are an incredible writer and what I will call a humorist, satirist in your writings. And you definitely get a download, and you meditate. We've been talking about meditating and worship, and how long do you meditate each day?
I meditate at least 4 hours every day, and
4 hours,
maximum
okay.
to 6 hours. Yeah, 4 hours is my routine, which I do every day, but there are days when I can do 6 hours, but anything beyond 6 hours actually becomes futile, because the mind becomes very tired and it doesn't remain a joy anymore. Therefore, I enjoy my meditations on not very long stretches at a time. So typically, actually the best time for me is as soon as I get up in the morning. So I'm up at about 5 o'clock, and I have a session of roughly an hour. Then I take a little break. Then I have another session of 1 hour. And like then I let go. Then I go for a walk and refreshen myself, think of other things, and then during the day another 2 hours. So 4 hours is more like it, sometimes a little more, yeah.
Well, something I commented in an email, because you will be our guest as we move into the new phase of our broadcasting called Symmetry of Soul, and we want to make sure everybody knows that. So beginning next week, we be sure to tune in to our broadcast at www.blogtalkradio.com/symmetry of soul. And Surrender, I made the statement, we'll talk more about when you'll be coming on the air with us in September, and you saw my last email, but we'll work out those details, because you're welcome to join us anytime. You know that, because we always enjoy your keen insights. And when you were an airline pilot, I made mention of this. When I drive, I don't have any music or any sound. That's a habit I started when I was going back to the farmlands, driving 555 miles. Or sometimes 2,000 miles, depending on where I was going. And the kids got used to that. And that is a form of open-eye meditation. And I was actually trained, highly trained, 1 year with the second. I said the leader. She really is the leader, but right now she's second, of the Brahman Kumaris. You're familiar with them up in the Himalayas, Surrender, I'm sure. And Sister Gianti. And in being a pilot, what was your average time of flying? And to me, you have to kind of go into a form of meditation to fly those long hauls.
No. And you can't do serious
meditation.
You can't do any serious meditation when you're flying an airliner. Actually, let me stand corrected. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, let me say this. When I'm driving, and when I have flown, you know, I have flown small Navion and little Piper Cub. What I'm saying is, when it's a long haul, the mind has to go into another space. I guess that's what I'm calling it.
Yeah. I can actually expand on what you're saying. Like you, even when I go for longer drives, intercity drives, I normally don't switch on any music, no, because I actually absorb what I'm seeing outside, not the traffic. I'm looking at trees and I'm looking at scenery, I'm looking at the sky, I'm looking at clouds. So it's a meditation of a very different kind where you are contemplative, but you are not lost touch with what your surroundings are. The meditation that I do at my own place, which I say I do 4 hours of meditation, that meditation is a different kind, very, very different kind of a meditation. Of course, you understand. And when you said in flying time, yeah, during flying time, you can get stretches in between when you can hand over the controls to your co-pilot and you know, maybe there is a time when there is nothing much demanding. You can go into complete contemplative mood by looking outside on the stars and skies and the galaxies, and you see the expanse of universal consciousness, where it goes and its limitlessness. So you go into a mindset where you have a connectivity with the expanse of what the whole play of God is all around. So, yeah, they are. But then, going back to my own days of flying, which happened more than 10 years ago, I was not so much into spirituality at that time, so I was not so focused. But today, if I have to fly, I think I'll be a bad pilot if I start flying. You need concentration. Yeah.
Okay, one last time. Suzanne, you shared that you really didn't get to participate with the celebration of Jesus. In a way, surrender is going to do the essence of enjoyable fellowship. That's a great group of people there in your part of the world. And now, Vicki, you shared, and we do have another caller. Let's see who this is. 603, you're on the air.
Hi, Annie. This is Lou in New Hampshire.
Hi, Lou.
Hi, Dr. Chris and James. I want to get back to the subject and report on our New England regional birthday celebration. This happens every year in Hopkinton State Park in Massachusetts. Last year, of course, we had a hurricane. I don't know how many went. I didn't. But I went the 2 years before that, and, of course, this past weekend where we had a beautiful day. Polly Friedman came up from Rhode Island, and a whole bunch of people were there. I can't say we New Englanders are a massive and super powerful army of rancher readers, but we are certainly a powerful platoon. Our numbers may not be huge as, say, in Boulder, but we are an amazing group of people, and it's always an extreme pleasure in terms of fellowshipping when we do get together, and we have many, many gatherings regionally. In addition to a bunch of great familiar faces, we had five people show up who had never attended a Urantia gathering before.
Are you serious? Five?
Honest to God. And it's all, what I always love about such gatherings is the way with which the more established readership embraces new people. This is always a touching thing to see. I just love it. And they get energized by it. We get further energized by it. And then they make contacts and make commitments to join study groups and attend other functions. There was a guy there from Gloucester, Mass., who been reading since 1976. I've been reading since 75. And this was his very first time where he met other readers. And that is not similar to my personal story, where I read for 27 years in a closet before I ever met anybody else. And once I did and joined a study group, it was the absolute best thing I ever did in my life, because now I'm hosting my own study group in the northern part of New Hampshire, and George Weshey announced the beginning of his study group in the southwestern part. So we may be a tiny state, but New Hampshire now has three study groups, which is a pretty pretty amazing thing.
Yes, that's good.
Oh, what a joy to hear. That just warms my heart. God bless you up there.
Yeah, and our study group is all about coffee and dessert, too.
Nothing wrong with that. And Suzanne, we're going to kick back. I know Augie still has his study group out there on the ranch, right, Suzanne?
Yes, he does.
I love to go to
Augie's.
I love Augie's, and that actually started out as Suzanne's study group, and they alternate each week. I love to go to Augie's place. And would you describe Augie's place when we go out to his ranch out there?
We think it's out in the middle of nowhere, but it's just west of Fort Worth, and he's got horses and barns, and it's just like stepping back in time.
And describe the room that we're in, Suzanne.
Oh, well, I haven't been there for so long, Anne.
It's actually a 3 or 4 car garage, probably a 4 car,
oh,
5 car.
Okay, yeah, it's a big old garage.
But what it does, all the doors open up, and it's just a giant room with the kitchen and couches and tables, and you're looking out across the ranch and beautiful swimming pool. And so when the weather's nice, of course, we couldn't do it right now, Suzanne. What's the temperature in Dallas?
Oh, hey, it's about 70 degrees right now because the rain has come through and the cold front made it down. Yes, 70
well,
degrees.
Well, y'all run over to Augie's and have an event. But that's where we're going to have our fifth Saturday gatherings. I've been communicating with him.
Yay, that's fabulous.
So now I'm encouraging some other people to call in and to share about their experiences, and I'm wondering if I can take any more callers because it looks like we're packed up.
Annie, I made my report, and I'll sign off now and just listen.
I made my report. Well, you know, we have people talking about attitude. Vicki, y'all, this is interesting. While I've been here in very vibrant group in California, always has been, but I've had people say, well, you know, the ranch community is waning. There's no young people, and there's no new readers. Well, you know, that's an attitude that we need to let go of. The more you speak that, and it doesn't matter about numbers. Y'all know that. It's just spirituality on this planet, and I know, James, you had some new people at your study group last night.
Yes, we did. Had two new readers come there to 533, and we had never even met them before. So, you know, I hear what you're saying about I don't go along with, you know, that attitude or, you know, people kind of get into that despair mode of, you know, the movement isn't going anywhere, because my experience is just the opposite. I see a lot of activity, a lot of thriving readership, and we know that the foundation is selling a lot of books. We know that the downloads on internet books are going off the chart. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on, and we may not be seeing physical evidence of it yet with everything, but study groups are growing. And things like what we're doing right now, these kind of resources and sharing is on the increase. So take heart out there and keep the faith.
Well, yes, and you know, just like other religious groups, people who are under 35, we have three kids, 33, 29, and 27. And a lot of young people, they're living their lives, and I find a lot of spirituality with these young people. I'm engaged with them every day in their 20s. Even out here, I have just had incredible encounters with young people. New people and people that I met when I was out here before. The first day I was here, the second day I had lunch with, I think she's about 38, and a young man that's 33. I met them the last time I was here. They're both readers of the Urantia book now. And within 24 hours, I introduced the book to at least five young people, and because they'll start engaging me in conversation. It's not like I go out and, you know, with a big banner. It's people, and again, I know that's me just simply allowing the spirit as best I can to be there in the moment. And if people begin to talk to me and engage me in conversation, then I know the spirit is at work. And that doesn't always happen a lot of times in the larger cities. And getting back to these young people, you're right. They're downloading, they're listening, they're reading on the web, they're joining these virtual study groups like we have here. And some of them choose not to physically go to groups. But that's typical. They'll wait till they're about 30, 35, sometimes even 40 before they decide to participate. And Surrender, you've chosen not to participate in the Gurdwaras anymore, right?
Sorry, say it again.
You have chosen not to go to Gurdwaras, to the temples, to the Sikh temples very much anymore.
Yeah, no, I don't go there very often. I have no objection in going there, but I find it's going to any temple or a Gurdwara or maybe to what extent to churches, I'm not so knowledgeable on that. They become much of a social activity where you socially meet and reflect over life. But the area of my concentration is into inquiry. Mine is not for a chit chat or to go and hang in there for a, you know, social meeting. No, I'm not into that kind of mindset. I'm into a spiritual inquiry all the time, and I find that spiritual inquiry actually does not come out in these kind of gatherings. Spiritual inquiry
Amen.
Is a very personal journey, very, very personal journey.
Well, and I'll take a little different tack there. As you know, I'm blessed. There's two Gurdwaras in particular that I attend regularly. And when you walk in the door, especially the wee early morning hours, and you'll have to remind me what that's called when you show up and it's silence. And then, of course, the reading of the Holy Scriptures, the Guru Granth Sahib, without stopping. But when I go into those services, even the regular services in those two particular small temples, very worshipful for me. Now, afterwards, there's eating and langar, and I don't hang. I sit with the grantees, you know, the priest. I don't like that word priest with them, but they'll usually come over and sit with me. But it's okay, that social aspect afterwards. The Yuan's community has a tendency to eat the food before. I understand eating it afterwards because you kind of doze off after you eat.
Yeah. No, personally, Anne, I am totally for it. I agree with it. I approve of going to social places. I totally admire all places of worship, no matter which religion, which class they come from. It's a good place to go. Your value system in life comes from these kind of associations with scriptures, which tell you what are right or wrong in life. So it's very essential. It's very good. It's very meaningful. Personally, for me, I think I have done my search for social activity in life. I am quite saturated with that, and I think my life actually at the moment does not need the direction for what's good and bad. I am into spiritual inquiry. I am into making a connection with this universal consciousness, if you may. So I am into a different arena now. My kind of people will be there in all sects of religion, anywhere, in very big way in Christianity, who do contemplative meditation in Christianity. But they are far and few apart. Most of the people are there to join in, they want to see the ritual, they want to wear clothes in certain way, they want to go in certain times.
Right.
Same way,
right.
As you said, in Gurdwara, they would go over there, and when they have a guru, what you are asking me, the word is called Akhand Pat. Akhand Pat is a continuous recitation for 48 hours. Now, they do the recitation for 48 hours, but actually in those 48 hours, honestly, nobody's listening to nobody, honestly. You know, it's like it carries on. It's a ritual. It is you people who are participating, they feel enriched by the presence of a word that is going on. A word is being said. But what is being said, nobody's listening to it. And
what is the early morning when I walk in? It's about 4, 4:30, and we start out in silence. What is that called?
You mean in a gurdwara?
Yes, sir.
But no, they don't do it. I don't know in your
part of the world. Yeah, we do it here, but that's okay. I'm just saying, now my husband, I'm just saying it's enriching for me because when it's read without stopping, I just take my little pillow and I just, I listen and contemplate and I just doze off and it's very enriching. But you know what, Suzanne, you know my husband, right? When's the last time you saw my husband at a study group, Suzanne? Did we lose Suzanne? What? She's there, but I think she's got us on mute. She must be at work. Steve, I've said this before, his meditation is under the hood of a car. Chris, so getting back to the celebration of Jesus, Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. What would you say to study groups as far, because you have a very vibrant, both of you gentlemen have a very vibrant and alive study group, and what would you say to people who are wanting, I'll start with you, Chris, and then James, you take it. Let's say there's somebody, I know there was someone that was, he didn't call in, he did say hello in the chat room. He's out there, and he's a reader for about 8 years. He's never attended a study group. But yet he knows that he needs to sit with other minds, and he does do that every week here on the broadcast. However, there are times I think you need to physically be with people. I know if I'm alone too much, then there's sometimes my consciousness does something. What would you recommend to someone who is a reader, who has never sat? How would you start the process of a new study group?
I don't understand that last part. The process of a new study group?
Some people are very uncomfortable starting a new study group. They say, well, I don't have enough knowledge of the book to facilitate.
Okay. Okay, well, I mean, you have the two different things that you're bringing in there. One, an individual coming to study group for the first time, and then there's also the question of actually starting up a study group. Let me just comment on that, on the issue of those who have never really attended a study group. I mean, the main issue in play there we touched on a while back in the broadcast here, that you must engage others. It's fundamentally why Jesus flipped the golden rule around, you know, from the negative to the positive, because you can do not unto others sitting by yourself in a monastery in the middle of the Sinai Desert. But you can't do it alone if you're going to flip it to the positive. You know, do unto others. There has to be others that you are engaging. It's all essential, like I was saying earlier, that to really militate against that settling down into the recesses of yourself, to engage others, you have to lift yourself up to some degree, or there's no way to engage another. And so it fosters a relationship with your higher consciousness. Even the most seemingly trivial back and forth engagement can't occur, you know, if you're an island universe. You know, you have to lift yourself up and engage some measure of that domain that the two of you share in common. You know, even to use language, you have to do that. Language, you know, it fundamentally exists in that commonality.
Yeah, Yeah. Could
Chris,
I
have a
Chris?
Question here.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oops.
Who's that?
I was just going to say, I'd like to just make a comment about what Chris has been saying. In a way, that was one of the reasons why I called in, and that is that there has to be some effort. And the Urantia book does say, you know, that the spirit will respond to the faintest flicker of faith. I think the Urantia book says that anyway. I'm not sure if I'm getting that from my Christian background or not. But sometimes they get a little mixed up. And then, you know, there's that saying in the adjuster, a passage in the adjuster papers about how the thought adjusters would like to change our feelings of fear to convictions of love and confidence. But they cannot, and I'm reading from it here, but they cannot mechanically and arbitrarily do such things. That is your task. So we do have to make, we always have to make a little bit of effort, at least a little bit, and then the adjuster can, and the other spiritual forces at work around us can amplify whatever effort we make. Does that seem right?
Yeah, and just it is at the end of paper 155 where they acknowledge that, you know, the statement is, "Now mistake not, my Father will ever respond to the faintest flicker of faith."
Oh, there you go. Yes.
I'm going to bring another caller in. This is wonderful. 951, you're on the air.
Hello. 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 Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, good. It's Patrick. How are you?
Oh, hi, Patrick. Patrick Yesh, the great
artist. Yes, great artist, right. Yeah, I'm here in Anaheim at Mark Erickson's house and been having a wonderful time meeting lots of people and agree totally with what you're saying about being with people. This summer I've been with a lot of people, hundreds of people. We did the road show with Thomas Orgula and Aurora. Also, was at the conference in Chicago and the conference in Montreal. So this summer I'm totally immersed in people, and I'll tell you, the difference is like from a human state of being to a Urantia state of being. It's just been lovely, and a lot of meditation, a lot of prayer, lots of sharing, and it's just... Hello, are you still there?
Yes, you're cutting out. Are you on a cell phone?
I'm on a cell phone, right.
Yeah, absolutely. And would you describe our experiences there at Mark's house? Mark was with us in the chat room. I'm not sure what happened to him.
What was in the chat room? Sorry?
Mark was with us, and I don't know what happened to him.
Oh, no. He had to leave. He had to leave.
Okay.
So, he had a beautiful celebration party here at his house, and we all... He was doing the audio visual for the Chicago conference, and he showed the movies of what happened there on a screen that he had hung across the swimming pool. It was really nice, and everybody was here celebrating, and there was music, and sharing with people is so important. I remember that quote that you just said about friendship and association, and how it sets the zest for life and the renewal for life. Up in Canada, we don't have that. There's a small reading group in Calgary, but boy, I'll tell you, down here, it's just like wonderful. The kinds of associations, the way you love each other and the way you cooperate and you've known each other for years and helped each other through family situations and relationship situations. Just the support I feel here is what I imagine it's like in the Urantia world. So you've actually created one, as far as I'm concerned. It's great, and I'd love to get back down here as fast as possible just to experience that, and the constant sunshine and the heat. I love that. My body feels so healthy right now. But it's mostly the people. I feel about 20 years younger because of the people I've met, and there hasn't been anyone that has not expressed that love from their adjuster for each other that I'm just actually swooning most of the time. Richard Amuro was a lot of fun. I spent a lot of time with him, and I came down to visit my daughter, too. So it's been a wonderful summer, and the association with people is absolutely critical for all those readers that are not associated in any way. I would just suggest get out there and do it. And locally, I do some volunteering to help me in the local area. And in that way, when you volunteer for different organizations, you get a chance to to show your ranch stuff, really, which is service, you know, service, unselfish service. So there are ways to do it if you're caught in a community that doesn't have a reading group. But I found that Thomas Orgula and a friend, married couple from Winnipeg, we spent 8 months on the phone every Monday with Diane up in Montreal planning the Montreal conference. And that alone, the getting on a board or a committee or something like that that's Urantia-based, really gets you to, and problem solving and planning things, it really gets you to know other people and intertwine your lives with them and see who you are in terms of service. And it sort of softens the sharp edges, you know.
Well, James, you've been involved in a lot of planning, and I know Vicki, you have too, Chris. I'm seeing who else might be with us. The process of planning a gathering or conference, just the process, is quite an engaging and growth. And Surrender, are you still with us?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good. I know Surrender and I are putting together a new broadcast for Sunday morning, and Surrender came up with this concept of spirituality beyond religions, and that's going to be very powerful. And just the process of doing that and preparing for this show is an engaging and growth process, and actually very meditative and worshipful for me, because there's a sense, whenever I'm engaged with another personality that reflects uniquely the spirit of the all-knowing, all-present being that some call God, some call Guruji, Allah, whatever, Yahweh, that is a communion and a worship. Worship meaning I am in the presence of a reflectivity, of a reflective essence of spirit. So it's constant worship.
Yeah, you know, you can say we all are mirrors, you know.
Sir?
Mirrors. We all are mirrors.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
That's an interesting word.
Or at least we should be challenging ourselves to be a mirror that reflects the harmony of the cosmos.
Yeah, so, you know, on that same topic, over on paper 28, it tells us one of the most important lessons to be learned during your mortal career is teamwork. So teamwork, you know, is the joyful association with your fellows and bringing something meaningful into fruition, whether it's a conference or a communion or a study group, anything that you do, or over in your non-Urantia world, if it's your church or your social organization where you're doing some sort of altruistic service, there's great benefits to it. And I did want to go back and touch on this aspect of longtime readers who haven't come into the family, the Urantia family. Like we're just hearing about this fellow who'd been reading for so long and just came in. That's one reason why I remain so hopeful, is because we know that there have been hundreds of thousands of Urantia books printed, and they're out there, and some of them, you know, people are, I think we have this giant reserve of people who have just been reading on their own, and we all know that life is cyclical, or runs in cycles, and, you know, when people hear that calling, that higher spirit calling, that's the thing, is we really need to be attuned to that. If we are hearing the urge, like we were talking earlier about how do you start a study group, or if you are feeling any kind of an urge, an inner urge to either attend one or start one or to get involved, there are ways to do that, and you should listen to that urge. You can find a study group by contacting one of the organizations, or you can start
call,
your own.
Then press pound. To cancel, press star.
What was that?
Okay.
That?
Sorry.
But
okay.
You know what?
Try again later. Thank you for calling. Goodbye.
I don't know what that... Well, hello.
Hi, I'm here.
One final thing is that with study groups is that, you know, the whole idea of from Field of Dreams, build it and they will come. I've had so many people tell me that they didn't know, you know, they felt like they weren't a good enough student of the book and they didn't know how to attract people and they didn't know where they were going to do it. And then they just made the commitment. They made the commitment to start meeting at a certain place every week or every month. And then you relax into the spirit. And next thing you know, you have people that are showing up. And people are calling you to find out. We really have to have that trust that if you have the conviction to do something, that our spirit helpers are standing along ready to assist in anything that's meaningful and progressive. And they will. I've seen it. So you can take that one to the bank.
And I would you know, chime in to add to that, you know, about the build it and they will come. You know, for people to recognize that what you're building is not a house of facts, you know, a place where there's scholars of endless facts of the 2,000 pages of the Urantia book, that will not attract and sustain a study group. What you need is a small group of people who consecrate themselves to discovering and sharing the truths of the fifth epical revelation. A group of people who demonstrate in the character of their lives that they are obeying truth. That will be compelling. And if you build that, they will come and it will grow.
You're absolutely right. And I, you know, what I really liked was what Surrender was mentioning as the spiritual inquiry. You know, that's really what the best study groups that I've been to aren't the ones that pontificate about the facts, like you say, but that go in with the spirit of inquiry of what are these advanced beings trying to convey to our small material minds? You know, how can we get on that track and expand our cosmic consciousness and enhance our spiritual perception along the lines of where they're trying to lead us? I love that. The whole idea of inquiry.
You know, I like this about the both of your study groups, as well as Robert Burns' study group, participating in those three each week, that y'all are not in any hurry. Some study groups say, we're going to read a full paper this week, regardless. So
that's a reading group, not a study group.
Yeah. I know, and they just... And by the time you finish, and I'm like, I've actually asked people, excuse me, we have eternity, give or take a day. Why are you in such a hurry to just sit here and read these facts? And Brother Dave on the chat board said something about that. And no, he made a couple of comments. I don't know. He was going to call. I don't know what he said, but... The facts, and Lou's saying the fact finders versus the truth seekers, nice. And Brother Dave, you said about planning something, about cooperating, so important. And facts are, well, Brother Dave is saying facts are also part of truth. So that's a paradoxical statement.
Well, you can't have truth without, I mean, truth, you know, just as a simple actuality. Is the relationship between fact and goodness. It's a super additive consequence of the relationship between fact and goodness. You know, and then you can personalize, realize that truth within yourself. But, you know, I mean, you can think of truth as stringing the wires on a fence. The facts are the fence posts. You know, you can't create that fence without the fence posts. And that's why, you know, they tell you that there's that twofold purpose. It's not just to reveal truth. You know, the second purpose of the fifth epical revelation is to coordinate essential knowledge. You know, to create those fence posts upon which the truth can be strung.
Can I
the truth
like
flows
that,
through the facts.
I like that, Chris. Especially, well, I would bring in that the triune association, with the facts being the fence posts, and you're stringing meaning and value upon them, just like the truth, beauty, and goodness, and the fact, meaning, and value. Those triune associations they give us, those are beautiful, beautiful ways to convey these ideas.
Yeah, the truth.
Surrender, did you want to interject something here?
Yeah, I actually wanted to say the same thing about the fence posts. It's a very good analogy that you're giving, fence posts. But then, you know, you'll see people who only create fence posts. They will create a huge field where they'll have a fence post all over and nothing inside the field. It's a vacant ground, nothing inside. So that is where making fence posts it will become futile at some stage. But and the other thing I have also felt, Chris, is that, you know, have a study group or have people together. Earlier you were saying that there should be sense of sharing and offer and give to others instead of being by yourself. My take on that is that unless you have filled your own self first, what are you going to offer anyway? Say if you have a pitcher which has got no water in it, and then you go giving people who want water, but if the pitcher is empty, what are you going to give, you know? So
yeah,
I find that there is a huge amount of effort required to first fill up the jug that you have in your hand before you go offering. Because in my own association, I find many people who are very eager to offer something, and then you interact with them for a little while and you find they have nothing to offer really, but they're very eager to give something, you know.
Yes,
so
exactly. I mean, you know, like, let's say I want to have, you know, I have this wish that, you know, I would have a personal relationship. Well, I can't have a personal relationship if I'm not functioning as a person.
Yeah, true, very true.
You know,
so
if I'm just an animal self, I'm not going to have a personal relationship. You know,
yeah.
So yes, you are right.
This has been my effort, you know, Chris, that I've been in last at least 6-7 years. I've been trying to fill my own self first before I step out. And I started stepping out recently a little bit. I'm yet hesitant to come out because filling up my own self was the first requirement, and which took a lot of effort. Have I filled myself completely? No, sir, not at all. Because it's not measurable. How much you fill up, there is no measurement. There is no inch tape by which you'll say how much is the depth. Something you get something you find that, okay, I'm getting the essence of what I'm looking. My inquiry is giving me some answers. All answers I don't even aspire to get, and I don't think anybody can get all answers.
Infilling surrender is, for me, as you know, I said earlier about how much time when I'm not out and about with all this Urantia and Parliament of World Religions interactions that I'm doing here, that infilling for me is in this quiet space. But also I will add to that I also get very filled up when, like what we're doing right now. If I had woken up this morning and not engaged in these interactions and just stayed here all day, and I did one day, I had a lot of catching up I had to do. I didn't talk to anybody, I didn't see anybody. And what's interesting, I found myself at the end of the day, I was okay, but I realized, boy, I better not do this too much, because I do enjoy it for seasons, but it needs to be a balance of engagement, because that's where I get an infilling. And some people know this about my life. I guess it was a year and a half ago now that my life changed dramatically. My husband's company required of him to move to up in the northern part of California without any consideration of his wife of almost 35 years. I mean, nada. When he finally, and, you know, he's an older gentleman, and companies will take advantage of an older person a lot of times because of their greed, and they want to suck off all the great mind and wisdom. And what happened, finally I heard them say, well, we will try to fly your wife out here once or twice a year. Now, I could not go out there and live. Because the owner is extremely wealthy. That's all he's ever known. He has his own vineyard, his own winery, his own caves where he keeps the wine. Great man. But I was just, I was not in the equation. And it stunned my husband in his own way. This house, he paid, the man paid cash for an exquisite home, but he set it up, his wife set it up like a gigantic dollhouse. And Steve said, "Ann, it's very uncomfortable. I have to keep everything perfect because I never know who's going to show up." They would not allow me to go and live with my husband unless we paid for it. Well, we couldn't afford to do that because Steve is 71 now. And it waylaid me. I was stunned at how I reacted. I really believe what happened was it was a form of almost preparing me if Steve were to leave this life before I do. And I was stunned at my own reaction. But I'm going to tell you, I've been used to this man traveling around the planet all of our years. But at least I knew he'd be home in a week, 2 weeks, a month. They wouldn't even give him the money to fly home. Now, having said that, I went into this cave. When I don't function properly, which I know is not good, but this is my whitehead heritage, I went into this deep place of a cavern. I didn't want to be with anybody. I didn't want to see anybody. And thank God for Kay and Bill Cooper. Y'all, and several people on here know Kay and Bill. They've been my neighbors for years. We didn't even know each other. We're your ranch foot readers. They would come and pull me out of the cavern. And Kay would come over, and she said, "You just got to get out of here." And it literally stunned me because our children are all over the country, and they were stunned. They were offering, "Well, Mom, come live with us, come live with me." Well, that wasn't going to solve the problem. I don't want to have to live with one of our kids, and there's my husband in Sacramento. Now, what saved me? What got me out of the cave? Number one, I did not resort to medications. The doctor tried to put me on, you know, "Well, zone you out." And I said, "I don't want to zone out." I got to, through prayerful reflections, figure this thing out because I could wake up any morning and be alone on this planet because I do have a blessed family, 3 children. I do have an extended family, but they're still Baptists. They're great people, but they're where they are. I had to force myself to leave the house. I didn't want to be with anybody. And what saved my mind was the weekly broadcast. There were times I could not even talk. They would ask me to call in. I could not talk. I could not communicate. In some way, I lost my sense of self-confidence. And I know only those who've experienced what I experienced can understand. It was like experiencing a death of my husband and a death of myself. And then I decided, along with Larry Watkins, we set up a live chat room on Wednesday mornings at 6 or 7 o'clock to chat with some people in other countries. Believe me, there were times I didn't want to do that. That's how this show got started. And because of these virtual study groups, I came out of my cave, and there's a page in the book I kept reading over and over. I read it over, and I'd listen to it over, conditions of effective prayer, that if I did not take action, that I was going to end up sitting. And you know what else I discovered, y'all? I would sit for hours in front of the television, and I've never done that. But what was I doing? What was I doing to my mind? I was shutting it down. I didn't want to deal with the reality of building a new life. So I'm going to say to anybody out there who's listening now or in the archives, if you're in a place of too much isolation, and you don't want to be around people. And let me tell you something. Just going shopping into the mall. I'm not a big shopper. We bought clothes once a year when I was on the farm, if the crops made. So I'm not big on shopping. Force yourself to be engaged with people. Go serve in some capacity. That's something else I did. I started offering my services. I started helping a neighbor Go Feed the Homeless once, you know. I started going out and just walking in to a church that I knew, and I said, I'm willing to do anything. And I started, whatever, I'm willing. I started going with my prophet buddy, and he was very upset. He said, my God, Ann, you're not yourself. I still, when I'm there, I put up his equipment when I'm in there in ministry. I know I went on and on about this, but there's a real problem with people who keep themselves in isolation. And I talk more than I normally do there. But well, you know what that was? Now, people have asked me, what's the difference between teaching and preaching? I am a teacher. I know I'm a teacher. I'm a trained teacher. And I'm also a preacher. Well, you just heard preaching. And we do have a caller. Oh, my gosh. I stood up and looked out across this ancient forest. We have another caller. Let's see who this is. 425, you're on the air.
Hi, my name's Ellen. I'm up, Ellen Gaynor. I'm up here in the Seattle area.
And, oh, hi, Ellen.
And I called about the same topic that you just expounded on beautifully, about isolation and how when we are in that position, it is by going out and doing something for somebody else that helps us get out of our own self and helps us really get back to that sense of God's love flowing through us again. I believe that it is through loving others that we grow. And so even if we feel bad, when we put our minds on and our attention on another person, that helps us, that springboards us, I think, towards not being self-centered. And anyway, what you were talking about really well illustrated exactly what I was calling about. Thank you.
Well, that's a wonderful coincidence. And I do see another caller, 951. I'll get to you in just a moment. Ellen, are you a reader? Your name is very familiar to me.
I was down there in Boulder for UB the News.
Oh, hi, Ellen. Now I know why your name.
And we never really, really got a chance to visit, but
I know exactly who you are. Yes, you were there with. Yes, hello, Ellen. You were there with another lady. Y'all rode down together.
Yeah, Nancy.
Nancy,
and she has a wonderful, vital study group that a lot of young people are interested in.
I totally remember you now, and that was an amazing adventure. Chris, you were there, and you might remember. Of course, you know, it's sort of a blur when you're trying to remember everybody's name with their faces, you know?
I'll let the next person.
Yeah, I'd like
thank
to just.
Thank you very much.
I mean, yeah, thank you very much, Ellen, for that. And
Ellen, do you attend the study group there, Ellen?
Yes, actually, I'm working with the the UAUS right now, and I'm seeking. I put down identifying autonomous Urantia study groups.
And wonderful.
I'm identifying them throughout the Pacific region and helping people connect with each other so that they can join a study group.
What a beautiful service. Thank you.
Yeah, Ellen was also a part of the Camp Brotherhood meeting that I was just out there. She's very active up in that area, helped coordinate and help put that conference on. And so thanks. Nice to hear from you, Ellen.
Hi. I'll let you guys continue. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, Ellen. Be sure to call again. And Chris, you were about to make a point, and then 951, I'll bring you into the conversation.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind everyone that in paper 193, in the Midwayers purposely, you know, inserted a lengthy examination of the causes of Judas's downfall because of this very issue of isolation. And just want to read you one sentence in there. As a result of his persistent isolation of personality, his griefs multiplied, his sorrows increased, his anxieties augmented, and his despair deepened almost beyond endurance. Mm. That is not a state that you want to be in. You must choose to engage others. Fraternal isolation is suicidal to the soul.
Suicidal to the soul. And I am a living example of that. And what it literally caught me off guard and scared me. And I thought of my father would always tell me, because being reared on a farm, it was easy to be alone without being lonely. You understand? When you're out in the middle of nowhere with no car, the only way to get around is on a horse or a mule, you know. You have to, and you're working out in the fields, you have to learn how to be alone without being lonely. So I pulled back into that state. Now, I kept myself fairly busy except for that stupid television. And it dawned on me one day. I said, oh, my God, I'm doing the very thing that I've told people to be careful with. And that it's okay. I enjoy good broadcasting. And I better, because our daughter is a producer, and Eli, her lifetime mate, is a director of a very successful TV show. And so I better enjoy the broadcasting. Here we are broadcasting, right? But what happens to the mind? And before I ask that question, I do want to ask that about you, Chris, from a scientific point. Let's take 951. We're getting a lot of great callers. That's wonderful. 951, you're on the air.
Hello, it's me, Patrick, again. I just dropped the call from that cell phone. But I just wanted to make a few comments about what you were saying earlier about teaching and preaching. The difference between the two?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's really important. I'm a teacher, and I'm not bragging or anything. I just got a master's degree in education, and it really, really showed me how important it is to understand the people that you are working with and trying to teach, how you have to be sensitive to what their capacities are intellectually, spiritually, and so on. And it really is a big difference between preaching, because on the road tour this summer with Thomas, it was very interesting how we reflected every night on what we were doing, and sometimes we were preaching and realized, oh, that's not too cool. And it didn't work anyway. So,
well, sometimes, yes, there's a time and a place, because in those few minutes, there, the essence of proclaiming a message came through. And there is a time and a place for proclaiming a message. And for the, because there were preachers, you know, that we need good teachers, edifiers, and preachers at times. Because when you preach, and somebody needs to help me with the etymology of the word preach, is to me, when I'm called to preach versus teaching, in the Sikh temples, I'm asked to share. And they know very clearly who I am and my background. Well, sitting on the floor, there's a way about that brings forth sharing and teaching. And you know what's interesting, body language-wise, gentlemen, when I started talking about that experience, and last week I preached for about 3-4 minutes, guess what I physically did? Anybody want to guess what my body did? I stood up. Unconsciously, I stood up, because there's a difference in the body language and bringing forth. So, and I am a trained preacher. I'm a trained, and by that, and by the way, Patrick, like Chris is a physicist. James is a trained musician, a trained singer. Surrender is a trained pilot. That's not bragging when you can back it up. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, all of us are teachers. We really are. And we have to be more sensitive to the people that we teach. But one of the points I wanted to bring out is that in this book that I'm writing on the thought adjuster section, I'm beginning to realize that the Urantia book creates an entirely new language of education as well as a language of psychology. And they didn't bring the book to us until we had those languages, the language of education and psychology. And so, and what I'm seeing is that the book is a masterful methodology of teaching, both the way Jesus taught and the way the book teaches us. They never tell us to do anything exactly. They never force anything on us. They always ask us a question so that we will make the decision ourselves. Like, why don't you hold, let the thought adjuster hold your hand during times of tribulation in your life and show you the long-range plan and the long-range vision in one of their statements. And that really, if you turn that sentence around, it says, adjuster, please hold my hand during times of great tribulation. So they want us to make that decision by asking us the question of why we don't. So it's a masterful method of educating. And I would like, you know, I was at the Chicago conference. They did such a great job this summer. Incredible, the speakers and everything. A lot of it is focused towards education. And I would like to see a couple of projects happen about the methodology of the way the Urantia book is written as a masterful teaching way, as a teaching methodology, and also to do a good research on Jesus' method of teaching. There's a lot in there about how he taught. Very
absolutely. And you know, you teach Native Americans, right?
Yes. And I'm teaching literacy. A literacy
and that's
program.
A different audience. That's a different, I'm sure that's a different style of teaching. When I teach English as a second language to people from around the planet, well, you sure can't teach that the same way I teach Excel and Access. I teach all levels of Excel and Access. Well, there's going to be a different method there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, like what Chris said also, you have such a great team there because you're all really teachers, and now we're using the radio to teach too, Blog Talk Radio and the Internet. And this isolation thing, just as one last comment, was suicidal to the soul. It's like, wow, what a statement. You know, what did they say? In order to make religious your talent that God gave you, you have to socialize it. And that's a beautiful statement, and a lot of the research I'm doing is on the soul. So if you do what they ask us to do, which is transfer your seat of identity from your human self to your soul, then you're using your thought adjuster's mind. What a promise of God, master teacher in your superconscious, the thought adjuster will help you with any situation in which you're dealing with people and wanting to convey a message. So. And if you use his mind, you're going to use an awfully beautiful, perfect, loving, temperate, gentle mind in the way of teaching people. And he'll give you the words all the time. He'll give you the words to tell people to bring us along.
I want to thank you, Patrick. Speaking of mind consciousness and depression and problems, I really want to thank you for sitting shoulder to shoulder with me in our ministry to our dear friend the other night. And I stayed up till 2 o'clock, I think. Yeah, I left there about 2. And you know what? I got here about 3:30. Well, actually 4, because that's right. My navigator got confused. Sometimes that happens. Got me into a pretty dangerous neighborhood. But, you know, God brought me out of that safely. And you ministered to her. We ministered to her, and what happened to her through the music, she picked up somebody's guitar, and suddenly I saw her whole countenance shift, and her mind was no longer on death, disease, and you want to share a little bit about that. And 425, I see you. If you want to talk again, please push 1.
Yes, it's really interesting to bring people around and make them see that they really are their soul, and that it's when they become their soul, when they make that shift that, hey, I'm not this body, I'm this eternal soul, really. It's like a second birthday, but it also gives you direct access to the thought adjuster's mind, because your soul uses two minds, your human mind and your adjuster's mind. And when they say that, I don't think we really look at that statement very carefully, because actually what they're saying is you can hear and use the mind of God. Wow, that's one of the greatest promises of God ever, especially for my poor human mind. Really, I love that statement, and I do. When I meditate, like Surrender, I just thought it was fantastic. He's meditating 4 hours a day. You just eventually get into the mind of God, and you're just like in a Marantia state. It's super beautiful. Peace, total peace, unconditional love from paradise. And you can see over and beyond most problems in life when you're in that state. So I like
Surrender. And Surrender, when you come on to be a guest with us in September on our new show, we want to mention that again. We're shifting gears here, which is fine. You know, we need a lot of radio shows like this. And I want to tell people again, beginning next Wednesday, www.blogtalkradio.com/Symmetry of Soul. And Surrender, our URL is, I just noticed last night, it's not Spirit of Religion, is it?
Sorry, say it again, Anne?
Our what we call URL, our designation of the Sunday broadcast, which will be Spirit Beyond Religion, which is more of an interfaith model.
Yeah.
I just know it's the address on that is...
Yeah, address will be same as you said. It'll be www.blogtalkradio.com/Suran, which will be S-U-R-A-N-N.
And that's my new soul name. I've decided that.
The last name is Surinder and Ann. So I picked up S-U-R from Surinder and A-N-N from Ann. So all you is www.blogtalkradio.com/Suran, S-U-R-A-N-N. And it'll be 10 a.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, 12th September, and then we will hopefully do it every Sunday after that at 10 a.m. in the morning. Yeah.
James, Chris, Patrick, you like my new soul name? Anne is Sure, so my name is Suran.
Suran, yeah. So it's a...
Sure,
Anne. Anne is going to be, yeah.
Sure,
Anne. We could have put actually S-U-R-E, but then E is not part of my word, my name, so I couldn't put E there. Yeah, so. Yeah, and Anne will be the one who will guide us through a new type of show in which, as the title suggests, spirituality beyond religion. You can say it in either way, say beyond religion or all-inclusive religion. That means everything put together and not everything inclusive. Or you can say, let's not have anything at all and think of total common sense, whichever way anybody wants to go. So I'm open for anything. Other word I want to tell you, Anne, is that you are talking about isolation, and I just want to fill in. I had an urge to say so. That isolation is at times, stressing, and to use the word maybe suicidal or something. I want to add a thing over here. Isolation is a very rich place also. It depends who's doing it. It depends what the intent is. It depends where you're going. In fact, the highest richness of your self-realization or self-fulfillment will occur in isolation. You can't do it in crowd. In crowd,
well,
it's very...
Absolutely. Jesus pulled along for seasons. James, how long did Jesus go up into the hills? And also another time in the... how long did he stay gone?
Are you speaking about his 40 days of...
40 days. One was where he made the great decisions, right?
That's correct.
And then didn't he go away again? one before baptism, one after baptism. So surrender, I totally agree with you. It depends on why you're doing it. My expression was regarding, and I have been alone at times for days, or sometimes 2 weeks when I go to the farm or longer, and my cousin makes sure that I have food. But that was when I knew I needed to study, to prepare, to write, to get prepared for major projects, and to focus.
No, I totally agree with you. In your given circumstances, what you were doing then and what you are doing now is absolutely superb. You are doing a very good job, and this is also essential. It is needed in life to do useful, meaningful work. But then when we talk about richness of spirit, that needs isolation. And if you look at any of the scriptures, every scripture will tell you any sage or any prophet came up to the level of religiosity through the ladder of spirituality. And spirituality occurs in isolation.
And let me just clarify what I meant
by
my comments.
By the way, We're down to 4 minutes, so please, yes.
Yeah, just quickly, let me clarify. It is definitely the case that sometimes you must isolate the self for the sake of reflection, but don't isolate the personality from the cosmos. It's not self-isolation, it's personality isolation that's dangerous.
I totally agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. That's
don't
what
connect from the unity.
Yeah.
You know, don't disconnect from the unity just because you need to put yourself, apart for a season.
I agree with you. I think that's very, very, very nicely said. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, that was an interesting turn. James, go ahead.
Well, those 40 days, reading on page 1515, the 40 days in the mountain wilderness were not a period of great temptation, but rather the period of the Master's great decisions. During these days of lone communion with himself and his Father's immediate presence, the personalized adjuster, he arrived one by one at the great decisions, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, Chris is right. Isolation, but not from the inner presence that we all share.
Beautiful. We have one more quick caller here, 603. You're there?
Yeah, Annie, this is Lou again in New Hampshire. I'll be very brief. I want to talk about the balance between, I don't want to call it isolation, but and service, between solitude and service. I think our relationship with God is a private, inner, personal thing that is galvanized in silence and solitude. However, the bearing of the spiritual fruits happens in the social arena. So we need solitude for one part of our spiritual growth, and we need social service for another part. So we need a balance. One isn't entirely bad and the other good. We need a healthy balance of both solitude and service. And I know we're running out of time, so I'll say goodbye.
Very
that
well
sounds
said.
Like,
I agree with you.
That sounds like symmetry of soul.
yeah, beautiful. Yeah.
Wow, gentlemen, I think Vicky is with us again. 425, you didn't push one. 425, you want to say goodbye? Your mic is open, 425.
Hi. I when I went back
no,
to
it's
my
not Vicky.
Listen,
oh, okay.
It's Ellen.
Well, hi, Ellen. Well, we've had a very lively virtual study group here. And Surrender, we want to report next week of how it went with the Urantia book readers that you're going to be meeting with.
Yeah, I will let you know next week. Yeah, I'll be meeting the group day after tomorrow, and then I'll let you know what happened.
Well, this has been an awesome show. James, would you, and Chris, Chris, you want to, in 10 seconds, some final words, and James, you can sign us off?
I think I gave my final words. Go ahead, James.
well, I would just say a couple words about Jesus, God, man and God, miraculous and natural, and from paper 120. In and through all this extraordinary experience, God the Father chose to manifest himself as he always does, in the usual way, in the normal, natural, independable way of divine acting. They're talking about Jesus, the incarnation miracle there. So that's it.
That's it. We're down to 40 seconds, we'll go up into, I'm going up literally for a long walk up into the mountains here, and for 40 minutes, not for 40 days. Surrender, thank you. Thank you, everybody. And if there were those who called and I did not see you on the switchboard, my sincerest apologies. And we will see you next Wednesday at the same time. A little different, again, www.blogtalkradio.com/Symmetry of Soul. We're down to 10 seconds, and we'll end with the song, and people can hear it. We'll end with that Alleluia by my good friend Robin Hackett. Bye for now. God bless everybody around this planet. Peace and goodwill to all. Bye-bye.